Now we know there are healthy things and there are things that are not healthy. A not healthy thing would be like cigarettes. Boy, smoking is not good for you. Or to eat, chas v'shalem, spoiled foods, things that are spoiled, moldy, could be poison, chas v'shalem, right? Certain things are not healthy. And then certain things are good for you, they're healthy. Now, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel wanted to find out the healthiest thing for your body. Now, of course, we know that Torah is very healthy. Torah and mitzvahs are the healthiest thing for your neshama. But what about for your body? Now, let's see. I'm going to take a few boys who raised their hand and sit nicely. What do you think is the healthiest, most gesunde thing for your body? Who would like to tell me something? No, I said only who raises his hand. Only who raises his hand. Shh. Nobody calling out. Shh. What do you think is a very, very healthy thing for your body? For your body. What do you think is?
Carrots.
Now, see, over here, I would have given you a chance, but not, I don't want to now because you screamed out. Okay, he says carrots. Who else wants to say in the microphone a very healthy thing for your body? I will give you a chance only if you have your hand up.
Rice cakes.
Good. Now again, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel was searching for the healthiest thing. Maybe he found out about these things too. But still, we're going to go on with what you think is the healthiest thing. Yes?
Apples.
Good. Apples. Okay. Who else wants to say a very healthy thing for your body?
Neshama.
What was that?
Neshama.
A neshama is very healthy for your body. Yeah, if you don't have a neshama, you're in big trouble. What else?
Pears.
Okay. Let's go over here.
Rice.
Oh boy, these boys, I'm sure their mommies know all these healthy things and tell them by the table, eat your rice, it's very healthy. Okay, let's see some other boys who know healthy things. Who would like to say something over here? Oh, only if your hand is up. Only if your hand is up nice.
Apple?
Only have your hand raised if you know something that nobody said yet. Over here, they said it already. I want to hear something that nobody said yet. Okay, who knows a healthy thing and he wants to have his hand up and when I put the microphone there, he could say it?
Milk.
Oh, that's a healthy thing. What else is a healthy thing?
Apples.
Try to say something that wasn't said yet.
Water.
That's right. Water. Okay. What else is a healthy thing?
Red pepper.
Red peppers. How do you like that? His mommy really knows all that kind of stuff over there. Here's a boy who's smiling. He knows the healthiest thing.
Cucumbers.
Very, very healthy.
Chicken. A drink.
A dream or a drink?
A fish.
A fishy is very healthy.
Plums.
What else?
Orange.
Everybody knows such good answers. I'm sure that Rabban Shimon Gamliel also was finding out these things.
Candies,
not so much.
Flesh.
Flesh. Okay. And now we're going to find out what Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel discovered to be the healthiest thing for your body. Shh. And I'm going to tell you with a story. And here's the story, everybody listen. One time there was a field. In the field was growing delicious fruits, and in another part of the field, delicious vegetables. There's tomatoes, and there were cucumbers, and there were apples, and there were bananas, and there were oranges, and cherries. Oh, delicious things growing in the field. And one day, some doctors and some smart people came together for a meeting, and they were discussing things that are healthy for people or things that are not healthy, and they wanted to try an experiment. An experiment means you try something to see what's going to happen, and you learn from it. All of a sudden, if you watch the field, you see they're building a big wall. Workers came with big, gigantic stones and cement, and they built a big wall in the middle of the field. They split the field in two with a big, gigantic wall, way, way, way up into the sky, and a thick wall. And people are wondering, how come they're building such a big, gigantic wall in the middle of the field? And it split the field in two. On this side is an apple tree. On the other side is an apple tree. On this side is a banana tree. On the other side is the banana tree. Of course, we know it's not exactly a real tree because you make hadama on a banana, but it still looks like a tree. On this side are cucumbers. On this side are cucumbers. On this side are plums, on the other side are plums. Exactly in the middle of the field. And all of a sudden the experiment started. On one side of the field they start rolling in big speakers. You know what speakers are? Just like now, my voice is coming out of speakers. But these were big, big speakers. Big, gigantic ones. Powerful ones. And all of a sudden, out of the speakers comes blasting noise. All kinds of noises come blasting out of the speakers. And loud music, but very loud music. And different kinds of tapes of just noises. Loud noises. And people came into the field with horns, blowing horns and banging on pans. And screaming and yelling and shouting and shooting off loud things and pops and bangs. And the whole day they're banging and making noise, and the speaker is making noise. That's on one side of the wall. And the other side of the wall was quiet. And you couldn't even hear the noise from the other side of the wall because the wall was so thick and high and made out of stone. So one side of the field was quiet and the other side of the field was noisy. And this went on for a few weeks and maybe even a few months until the plants grew and the vegetables grew and the fruits grew. And then the doctors and the smart people that came out into the fields to see what happened over here because of all the noise. They went to an apple tree. They went to an apple tree on the quiet side of the wall. They picked off an apple. And they tasted the apple. Oh, delicious. Sweet like sugar. A delicious apple. And then they went on the other side of the wall. And they picked off an apple from the other side of the wall. And right away they noticed, oh, it's very strange. On the quiet side, the apple was red and shiny and beautiful and big. And on this noisy side of the wall, the apple is little and yucky looking. And it's all like dried up. And it's not so shiny red. It's kind of a It's kind of a brownish, yuckyish red. It wasn't so pretty. And it was kind of mushy. The other one was hard and beautiful. Oh, let's taste it. And they tasted the apple on the noisy side of the wall. Oh, it's so sour. It tastes like pickle juice or something. We never tasted such an apple like that. Ugh. And it's an apple tree that should have been just like the other apple tree. Well, let's taste something else. And they go and taste the banana. And on one side, it tasted like delicious banana candy. It was so sweet. And the banana was long and yellow and beautiful and nice, and it smelled good. And on the other side of the wall where the noise was, the banana was brown and yucky, and it was little, and it looked like it was dried up. And they opened the banana, it was already mushy and brown, and they tasted it. Yeah. Tastes like paste, like cement, like glue. Doesn't taste good. Oh, it doesn't taste good at all. And the same thing with the tomatoes, and the same thing with the cucumbers, and the same thing with everything else. Until finally they decided one thing. On the quiet side of the wall, everything grew beautiful and everything was delicious. On the other side of the wall, everything grew not nice, and it tasted not good and sour and yucky. What was the difference between one side of the wall and the other side of the wall? Let's see if somebody could figure it out and say it in the microphone. Here's a smart boy, and he has his hand up in the air, and he's sitting quietly and nicely. What was the difference between one side of the wall and the other side of the wall?
Because in the side of the quiet, it grew up because it's quiet, but the other side, everybody was screaming, so it became littler and littler.
Became what?
Smaller and smaller.
Very good. Okay, he got it exactly. Boys, the main thing that made everything delicious and nice was quiet. Quiet was good, and the noise was not. Kinalach, this is what Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel discovered. Loi matzasi leguf toiv mishasika. The best thing for your body is quiet. Quiet is really healthy for your body. And if it's noisy, is that good for your body? Is noisy healthy for your body? Is noisy good for your head to be smart to learn Torah? No, quiet is. So we learn from this, Kinalach, the lunchroom should be quiet, the classroom should be quiet. Of course, there's a time to make noise, like the recess time, but even that should be the right way of making noise, but not screaming in a way that is just making noise and making too much noise. There's even a way to make noise. Quiet is good. So we have a quiet lunchroom. This year we're going to have a quiet lunchroom. What about the hallways when you're going in a line? Quiet. What about when you're going downstairs to go to the bus in a line? How is the line going? Quiet. And what about the way you're sitting on the bus? Of course, I said sitting, not standing. Quietly. And what about when you come into your house? Also, you can come in quietly instead of scaring mommy, screaming. Don't scream to mommy. Shh. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Now, we just learned that the Yetzer Hara had tried to stop the Akedah. Because whenever there's a very halakha thing, the Yetzer Hara puts all of his koyach against it. And the Akedah was such a halakha thing, maybe the most halakha thing that ever happened in the world until Mashiach comes. The Yetzer Hara tried to go to Avram and stop him, couldn't do it. He tried to go to Yitzchak, stop him, couldn't do it. He turned himself into a river, and all kinds of things in the way to stop them, still didn't do it. The Yetzer Hara saw the ram that was waiting there since the first Erev Shabbos, who was waiting in the world to be for the Korban for Avram, and to try to take the ram and tie him up into the bushes with his horns. He shouldn't go to be the Korban, and didn't stop that either. And there's other trouble that he made, and nothing stopped the Akedah. And the Yetzirah still did not fulfill any troublemaking to stop the Halakite from the Akedah. Not for Avram, not for Yitzchak, not for the ram. And all of a sudden he thinks to himself, let me make trouble for Sarah. And of course we know what happened, the whole Maisa, how he made a trick on Sarah and she passed away. Now, one of the things we see from this story is that the Yetzirah makes trouble for a halakha thing. The more halakha a thing is, the more trouble can come from the Yetzirah. Now, one thing we know, Kinalach, is that a chasana, a wedding, a Jewish wedding, is a very halakha thing. And the Gemara even says that by every wedding there's some kind of a trouble from the Yetzirah. Ein chupa beloy tigra. There's no chupa, there's no chasana, there's no wedding that takes place without some kind of a trouble. And why is there trouble? Because the Yetzirah knows that a wedding is so halik. A chasan and a kala are getting married, they're starting a new Jewish home. The new Jewish home is like the Beis HaMikdash. They're going to have a family and bring, hopefully, new Yidden into the world, keeping Torah mitzvahs, serving Hashem. This is Halakite, and the Yetzirah wants to stop it. So by every wedding, there's some kind of a trouble. And there's a story from the Tzemach Tzedek, a very interesting story, that one of his sons got married. There was a chasana, the son of the Tzemach Tzedek. And the day after the wedding, it was such a beautiful wedding, the Tzemach Tzedek himself came to the home of his son and his new kala, the chasan and kala. He came to their house. He knocks on the door, and his new daughter-in-law, the kala, she opens up the door. She sees the Tzemach Tzedek. Her father-in-law is by the door. Oh, please come in. Thank you. A visit from the Tzemach Tzedek. All of a sudden he says, this is your living room? This is your dining room? This is your house? This is the way it is? She says, what do you mean? He says, why should the couch be there? It should be over there. Wouldn't it look nicer if the couch was over there? Well, this is the Tzemach Tzedek. This is the Rebbe himself telling her to push to put the couch in a different place. And right away, she pushes the couch to a different place. And he says, and this table you put over here by the window? It should be in the corner. Okay. She pushes the table into the corner. And this chair, why is it here? It should be over there. She pushes the chair to a different place. And these curtains should be this color? Shouldn't it be a different color? Takes down the curtains. And, of course, he's ordering around, change this and change that. And why do you do this and why do you do that? And all of a sudden, she starts crying. She's crying. She feels terrible. And then the chasan comes in. And all of a sudden, the chasan comes in. He says, what's going on? What's the problem? And then he sees his father standing there. Hoi, look, my father's here. And the kala's crying. What's going on? And she says, your father came. I was so happy. The Tzemach Tzedek comes to our home. And then he says, everything is wrong. The couch is in the wrong place. The table's in the wrong place. The chair's in the wrong place. He doesn't like the curtains. He doesn't like the house. This should be here. This should be there. Oh, I feel so terrible. Of course, they're both wondering what's going on. And the Tzemach Tzedek now, he says, sit down and let me tell you what's going on. He says, I was very worried about both of you. Why? He says, because last night your chasana was so beautiful. It was so wonderful. And before the chasana, everybody was getting along fine and everything was going so smoothly with the caterers and with the band and with the families and with all the guests. Everything was going along so smoothly and so beautifully. So I was worried. The Kala says, what's there to worry? Baruch Hashem, we had such a beautiful chasana. And the Tzemach Tzedek says, because the Yetzer Hara still did not get his little piece. And he said, the Gemara says that by every chasana there's some kind of trouble from the Yetzer Hara. Ein chupa beloy tigra. There's no chupa that there's not some kind of a trouble because of the Halakite. And he says, I was worried because everything went so nicely and so beautifully and so smoothly. I saw the Yetzer Hara did not yet make any trouble. And because he didn't make any trouble, I was worried that maybe after the chasana, there might be some kind of a trouble that would be unexpected. Like, Kinalach, he didn't explain this, but this is what I explained. By the Akedah, the Yetzer Hara still did not stop it, and even afterwards he was still determined, he still made up his mind, he's got to make some kind of a trouble. Even though the Akedah took place already, he says, I still have to make trouble, and that's where he got Sarah, remember? The Tzemach Tzedek says, after the chasana, I was worried, now the Yetzer Hara was still around somewhere waiting to make some kind of a trouble. So I decided, instead of waiting for the Yetzer Hara to chas v'shalom do something unexpected that might be not good, I made a kapara. Remember Kinalach on Erev Yom Kippur? We do certain things that we say, Hashem, please accept this as a kapara that something else shouldn't happen. Like you stick out your hand, you get a piece of lekach, and you say, if this year I have to be a beggar, I'm yetzi with this piece of lekach, with a piece of honey cake, or kaparas. With kaparas, you say, God forbid, chas v'shalom, in case I am supposed to be in big trouble for my avedas, let it happen to the chicken instead of me. So the Tzemach Tzedek said, in case the Yetzer Hara was planning to make trouble, so I took it upon myself that I'll make the trouble. And I came in and I told you, put the couch here and put the table there and put the chairs there. And of course, you got very upset. So now we fulfilled the inyan of the Yetzer Hara making trouble. There was some trouble. And now we ask Hashem that we're yetzi with this and nothing else should happen. And that's Kinalakna's story. This is a story about Burin the Fashes, a very interesting story, a true story. Once there was a Yid, and he was from, he kept Torah mitzvahs, but he did not believe that he should be connected to a tzaddik. As we know, besides Kinalach, that we learn Torah and do mitzvahs, we know that the Torah says that the Yidden have a leader who's a tzaddik. Just like in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the leader of the Yidden? Moshe Rabbeinu, he was the Rebbe, Rabbeinu, he was the Rebbe of all the Yidden. So everybody in every time has a leader who's just like a Moshe Rabbeinu for his time. And the Yid is not alone. He has a leader who is just like Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's his Rebbe. But this man said, there's nobody so great anymore. There's no big tzaddikim anymore like that, that should be such a big person like a Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore, I'm not going to have any Rebbe. I'm just going to do whatever my own mind tells me. That's not the Yiddish way. Of course, there's many things that we make up our mind about, and that's, of course, fine. But there are certain things that you cannot necessarily go by your own mind. You have to ask your Rebbe. And he did not believe that there was a person, such a big tzaddik, that should be his Rebbe. Now, he had friends, and they had a Halakha Rebbe. And they said to their friend, come with us, We want to show you our Halak Rebbe. And also, you could go to him and you could also have a Halak Rebbe, just like the Torah says. But we want you to see him. No, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. Please, come for a Shabbos with us. You could stay with us and just look at our Rebbe and you'll see how Halak he is. Okay, the man finally decided to come. Friday night, everyone was in shul. Mamish, hundreds, maybe thousands of people. All of a sudden, the Rebbe came into the shul. The shul was very quiet. And they said to their friends, see how our Rebbe comes into the shul and it's quiet? He says, yeah, what's the big deal? So, you know, sometimes an old man or a big Talmud Chacham comes into the shul, it's quiet. And all of a sudden, as crowded as it was, a big way parted and the Rebbe went through to the front. You see how everybody moves aside for our Rebbe? How Halak he is? Ah, it's a big deal. So they moved aside. That doesn't show too much. Well, the Rebbe went up to the front and the davening started. And the Rebbe was concentrating on the davening. You could see Mamish, his face was shining, and he was davening. You could feel how special it was. He said, look, you see how our Rebbe is davening? He said, well, you know, many people daven like that. What's the big deal? Well, Kinalach, what could they show the man? The next morning, also by the davening, he didn't really get so impressed. And by Kriya Sateira, the Rebbe had Maftir and the Haftira, and, you know, everybody else felt how Halak it was. He didn't get so excited. And then after the davening, the Rebbe gathered all the Jews together and he spoke for 4 hours on Gemara and on Medrash and on Chumash and on Rambam and on Rashi and on all kinds of things from Hasidus and Kabbalah. And he didn't have any papers in front of him. He's speaking all of these wonderful things, explaining. And they said, you see our Halak Rebbe, how Halak he is? Well, what's the big deal? And by the beginning, he made Kiddush. And the way he said a bracha, and the way he drank, and the way he ate was so edel. What's the big deal? Yeah, I'm not so excited. Kinalach, the whole Shabbos went by. It was near the end of the gathering. And the singing was so halik, he wasn't excited. And finally, Kinalach, it came near the end. And right after Shabbos, the man was going to go home. And right at the end of the gathering, people started to go home. All of a sudden, the man comes running over to his friends. He's so excited. Ah, the Rebbe's Halak! The Rebbe's Halak! Now I know the Rebbe's Halak! I want to be close to this Rebbe! And they said, wait a minute, we don't understand. Everything is over. Shabbos is almost done. The gathering is over. The davening is over. There's no learning now. There's nothing special. The singing is over. And all of a sudden, now you're excited. What in the world did you see? What's getting you excited? And he said, I happened to be watching at the very end as the Rebbe was making a bracha achreina before he left. And I noticed something. Now boys, nobody else was noticing this, only this man. He said, you know what I saw the Rebbe do? When he came to say Borei Nefashos, he looked into the Siddur and he pointed with his finger to every word of Borei Nefashos. That means that he's such a Halak Tzaddik. Because everybody else, even a kid, you know, they say Borei Nefashos and they know it Baal Peh, so they say a Borei Nefashos and they get up and they go. This Rebbe, this Tzaddik, every word he said and pointed with his finger and looked inside the Siddur, even in a Borei Nefashos. If he's so careful and even such a small thing, like saying Borei Nefashos, and for sure, you think he knows it Baal Peh? If he's a tzaddik that knows the whole Gemara and the whole Torah Baal Peh, do you think he knows the Borei Nefashos Baal Peh? And still, he looks into the Siddur and points with his finger at every word. He says, if this tzaddik is so careful, even on a Borei Nefashos, it means that he's so halik and I want to be connected with this Rebbe. So from a Boyer Nefashes Kinalach, this man became connected with the Rebbe. Now this is a true story. Do you understand this story? In other words, not only is a tzaddik careful on a big thing, but even on a little tiny thing. And this is because a tzaddik is like Hashem. Does Hashem care on only big things like malachim and big tzaddikim and things up in the Shemaim? Or Hashem even cares about a little small thing? What about a little baby? What about a Kometz Halafah? Does Hashem care about it? What about a little tiny piece of shemais? Does Hashem care about it? What about if a person, he ate fleishiks, and you're supposed to wait 6 hours, and the person waited 6 hours, but there's 1 minute to go. Does Hashem care about the extra minute? Of course. Even on a small thing, Hashem cares about it.